No, 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 I'm sorry. Janie Rodriguez was baptized a few months ago. That's Eloise's sister. The Janie yesterday, Janie Pena, was Catherine's aunt. And that was her granddaughter, Ashton, okay, that was baptized. I'm going to tell you more about that here in a second, but look in Acts chapter 4. Acts chapter 4. Now, before we start reading it, before we start trying to breathe anything in, let's breathe some things out. We spent a month, at least a month, just on the first two chapters of the book of Acts. Why? Talk to me. Think through it. Why do you think the first couple of chapters of Acts are so significant that I would think it'd be a good idea for us to spend a month on them? Of course, we could spend longer, but we spent a month. Why do you think?
It's the beginning of the church.
Those of us who've grown up going to church hear this, and it doesn't register, I don't think. I don't think it has the same significance. But when I was talking to some of our folks that are visiting a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about that, if you want to read about the very first church that was ever, the very first church ever, you can find it in the book of Acts in the first two chapters. Now, most of us are attached to a church by the church where we were raised or where our parents went. I'm trying to get us out of that thinking for a second, and it's to go right back to the Bible and just say, let's look at that church. Now, does that mean that I think we should, listen to my question, do I think we should imitate everything we see them do? No, because not everything they did was right. Not everything they did was righteous. But are there things they did that were right, that were righteous, that ought to be a part of our, it would be a good idea for it to be a part of our thinking and a part of our actions and reactions? Yeah, for sure. Tell me one thing you learned from that church. One thing you learned, and not from that church, learned from the men who God used to build that church, to plant that church, whatever way you want to say it. One thing you learned about them from those first two chapters.
They were men of prayer, like even when they were waiting for what they were supposed to do, they patiently waited several days, almost a couple weeks, really, and they spent that time in prayer to God, asking God for wisdom and guidance and just what they were supposed to be doing. So they just didn't do things off the whim that they wanted to. They prayed about it.
Okay. Let's underline that. Circle it in your mind. Find those passages in Acts. And we're going to come back. We're going to see it again today. But this is not a Sunday school answer, and this is not a Sunday school approach. Are we serious? I guess I'm asking. I'm serious. I'm serious about us planting a church here. I don't know how many meetings we'll have. I don't even know how many meetings we have. I don't know how many meetings we'll end up having here. I don't know what different shapes, forms, and fashions things will take place. We've got to do something with our Bible classes. We've got to do something with our Wednesday nights. There's all kinds of changes coming like that. But I'm serious. I got the last days, years, months of my life. I want to focus on, I don't want to plant, well, I told you before, I don't want to be makeup on a dead body. I don't want to be lipstick on a corpse. I don't want to be perfume on a cadaver. Man, I want to be a part of a living, breathing, growing church, just like you read about here. Yeah, we're going to have all the mistakes and plus some. But at the heart of it, I want us to be the church that Jesus wants us to be. Now, Brad made it, it's a big deal. They prayed, and it's mentioned so often that if you pay any attention to it, that it is one of the things that you start to take to heart. So let's do that. Let's become a praying people. And I'm not talking about just in our meetings, but in my life, become a person of prayer. What else? What else do you notice from those men that God used? They were in the business of saving lives. Now, Catherine jumped to chapter 3 to get the point, but it's evident in chapter 2 as well. People are important to these men. Now, I need you to think through. Think from your church experience in the past. What would you have said in your church experience in the past was the business of church? What was the business of church? Where you grew up going to church, what was the business of church?
For the doctrines that you want to teach, and even money got into it sometimes. It's like, how we're going to get the money to do this, and what we're going to, what our doctrines are specifically.
Yeah, now listen, there's nothing, I got no right to criticize anybody. We're not criticizing. I just want you to give me your impression, okay? You're not slamming anybody, you're just giving me your impression. Did you grow up in a church where the predominant, the emphasis on the syllable was to make sure you had the right behavior inside the church house? You've heard me call them church house rules. The church where I grew up, that was the focus. That was the predominant message of every sermon, or most sermons that I can't say heard. Yeah. I didn't obey. I heard. Okay, yeah, I'll say that. Sometimes it's the money. When I was going through my wilderness years after all my mess, and I attended almost every church in town, trying to find some rest, trying to find some peace, trying to find some hope. And I cannot tell you how many churches spent the predominant message of their several of their Sundays on their budget. It was summertime and the budget was hurting. You know, money was not coming in. So the preacher was spending time talking about, let's get that money back coming in here because we've got to build this or we've got to take care of that. What was the predominant business of church where you grew up? And that's, you understand, that's what our discussion is. I can't tell you that's what my little church where I grew up did, was just focused on church house rules. That's all I remember. I'm telling you what I heard, what I remember, okay, my perspective. So sometimes it was an emphasis about across, around the world, rather than across the street. Last call. Okay, we had an agenda, and that has even become more developed. We did not have in my little place, we did not have like a brochure or a bulletin that listed off the order of service. You know why we didn't have that? Didn't need it. I'm serious. We did not need it because, I mean, it was going to be the same thing, everything. We had the announcements. We had the opening prayer, and then you had three songs and the main prayer. And I can even tell you to this day, I can tell you when you're supposed to stand, which song you're supposed to stand on, because it's a song right before the sermon, because the preacher wanted you to get your blood flowing before he started preaching. I don't know if that's right, but I've always teased about that. But it was, the agenda was to meet the agenda, to have a church service and make sure we did what we were supposed to do that way. Now, what was their agenda? That's what Catherine was talking about. What was their agenda? What seemed to be the agenda, that group of men that God was using to build the first church?
To tell people about Jesus with an urgency.
All right, so that just, and Sue just added the third factor, which jumps off the page at us. Brad said prayer. Let's not overlook that. Catherine said people. People were their priority. Boy, let's do not make light of that. Don't miss it. But they also made a habit of talking about Jesus. Now, I know if you grew up going to church, you have a hard time believing what I'm about to tell you. Now, if you've been around here for very long, you start to see it, so you begin to think, man, maybe there is something to it. But if you did not talk about churches, if you did not talk about church house rules, if you did not talk about the differences in those churches and the validity of those different rules, if you just decided, let's just talk about Jesus, what might happen? What you see in the book of Acts. God was praised, people were blessed, and souls were saved. That's how Acts 2 ends. I want to be a member of that kind of church. Now, I'm not saying you have to be. You're still welcome here. You're still welcome here. I'm going to make coffee anyway. Communion's going to be ready. And all if all this needs to be for you is a place where you come and take care of that need you have to have church, you're welcome. That's the truth. You're welcome here. I don't want to do that anymore. I want to be a part of building a church, planting a church, growing a church, being a church. How do you want to say it? That's the church like you read about in the Bible. And that focuses on making sure Jesus is taught to people and that we're praying that we do it in the right way and keep doing it even when things get tough. And that's where we are in chapter 4. Look in chapter 4. Now, I'm glad Catherine's here because it happened in her family the other day, so I'm going to put her on the spot. And then I'm going to open up the door for you to discuss your experiences in this. But what happens when people start listening to about Jesus? When people are praying and people are talking about Jesus and people are focused on people, when they're doing what these men did with God's help, what happens?
People don't like it.
And if you look, there were some people disturbed. Honestly, could somebody tell me why anybody would be disturbed? Why anybody would be disturbed if lost people are being saved, if lame people are being healed, if hungry people are being fed, and that's all that we've read about this church doing in Acts 2. If that happens, what should be the response? Woo-ha, man, good job. What is it? Darla always says, woo-hoo. I mean, that's what ought to be. Look at what's going on. Isn't that wonderful? There should not be a comparison. Oh, I don't believe that's the right way to. No, and you understand that goes on, right? You understand that goes on in church and it goes on in town. It goes on in this town. It goes on among people that you know. About where you go to church, you know it goes on. I don't know why it goes on. It just amazes me. If lost people are being saved, hungry people are being fed, God is being praised, wouldn't you think folks would go, outstanding, amen, woo-hoo, whatever they say, right? But there were some people that were disturbed, okay? They were disturbed. Catherine's in a meeting with her family. They're having it's Memorial Day. Her mom is now a Christian. Catherine's influence and teaching, her mother obeyed Jesus. Dad is close to obeying Jesus and is already making, he's got some health problems, so we're trying to work some things around so it make it easier, simpler for him. Two of her brothers were at this dinner, and Catherine's not trying to convert them, not trying to change them, it doesn't say anything negative about their church, but begins to mention wanting her grandchildren to grow up and to teach about Jesus and to pray about Jesus and to care about people, the same kind of things that we've been talking about here. If you can, give one of the reactions to one of the brothers. Stop trying to force God down people's throat. Now, if you know Catherine, you know that she's never done that. But if people don't like what you're doing, what will their reaction be? They'll be disturbed. They'll be angry. They'll be discouraging. They will do whatever they can to get you off topic, right? They were disturbed. Keep reading. They seized Peter and John, and because it was evening, they put him in jail until the next day. Now, many who heard the message believed, and the number grew to be about 5,000. That is amazing. That is amazing. In the short time, they baptized 3,000 on the first day, and now just days later, the number is 5,000. And that's the number of men. That's not talking about the women and the teenagers and the young men and young women. This is 5,000 men. Okay, now think about it a second. Is it biblical to remember how many people God has added to the church? Is that a biblical thing? It's not a glory thing. It's not a braggadocious thing. It's a spiritual, honorable thing to know how many God has added to a family, to a church. Why is that important to know?
Everybody's important.
Everybody's important. Why is it important to know? Recognize that God's doing His, that God's working through us, bearing fruit. It is very encouraging. But if you have cattle, do you want to know how many cattle you have? If you have dogs, do you kind of know how many dogs you have? Yeah, and you know what you need to get for food. You take care of them, right? Knowing how many you have tells you how to, and I just went back January. Just because of the way our brains think, January 1 to yesterday, June the 11th, God has added 32 people into this family, into this church. You won't see many of them in here. You know why? Tell me why. It's too early. It's too early because many of them didn't grow up going to church like we did, and their schedules, it has not clicked for them. Now, it's clicked for Catherine. It's clicked for John. It's clicked for Johnny. But we won't see many of the others because they want to come later in the day. You know, we started our third meeting 2-3 weeks ago. The numbers already, there are more people attending that third meeting than attend this one already. And the predominant number of those people are visitors. They're not people that have obeyed Jesus yet. We need to know those numbers so that we know how to take care of them. And you can say, and I'm going to be mean as I know, I'm going to be a snake right now. Some of you can say, well, I don't ever see them. Well, you know where they are. Shake off your nap and come on. Oh, I got other things. I know. And if you got other things to do, go do them. God bless you. Nobody's fussing. You hear? There's no fuss there. But you can't sit in one spot and say, well, I don't know any of those new people. When are we going to do something to help me know those new people? When are you going to do something to get to know those new people? You know, that's not the way. We don't have those kind of deals. We don't say, okay, we're going to have a new people's deal. No, because then everybody would, I'd be new people because I'd want to eat. So you get up and get to know them. Stay around long enough when they're walking through the door to grab them. And if you don't know them, it's okay to meet them. It is really okay to introduce yourself to somebody when you're walking out and they're coming in. That's why I tell you, we're never going to hurry you out of here. I want you to have time. I want there to be lots of confusion. I want there to be lots of chaos. I want there to be lots of mixing and mingling. It gives us one more chance to show them that we welcome them to the family of God, right? All right, but here's the point of the lesson. What do we do when people are disturbed? What do we do when people get upset with us? Now, folks, these sometimes the, well, Ernest was telling me this morning, he met a guy at Stripes who needed help getting into his car. He is trying to help him, and the guy, he kept trying to invite him to church. He kept trying to talk to him about Jesus, and the guy didn't want anything to do with it. He just wanted to get help getting in his car because he'd locked his keys in and wanted to get out of the way. That kind of bothered Ernest, and the guy didn't want to listen to Jesus. Are there going to be people like that? Yep, guess what? You can't change that. But does that mean you don't tell them? No, because you don't even know they're going to be that way until you tell them. So you tell them. And so Ernest was telling him. And what did he find out? In fact, that's funny. That guy had come here. He said, I seen you. You go to that church, don't you? Ernest didn't want to admit he knew y'all. You know, he said, yeah. He said, yeah. Yeah, very good. Word of God's meant to be shared. It's not to be supposed to be. Anyway, people are going to be disturbed. But the people that cause us the most grief, I promise you, are not the people like that guy. You know who causes, now listen, I'm talking to us. I'm not talking about anybody else. I'm not talking to second call, third call, last call. I'm talking to us. The people that cause us the most grief, the people that give us the most nervousness, the most heartache, the most heartburn, are the people that are religious, that we wonder what they think of us because of where we go to church or what we teach or how we teach or that kind of thing. You're going to get that. And you know you're already getting it. I'll give you one more chance. Anybody else got a story about getting challenged or getting, not threatened, but you get that negative feeling about what you're doing and what you're trying to do?
Mike is friends on Facebook. You know, we openly talk about God and he's very, you've read it, I sent it to you. Tries to twist it around and turn, you know, I don't believe that and you're never going to make me believe that.
All right. Give me another one. You don't take your children to church because they'll resent you later. Give me another one. Give me one more.
I'm going to that. I mean, I passed up an ambition to work on saving life, and I'm running into obstacles with my supervisor. He doesn't threaten me with suspension if I keep reaching out to people and talking to them. I don't want them in your area. I don't want you in their area. And it makes it really hard for me to talk to people like that, especially if they're coming up to me. I'm not going to tell them, hey, I need you to go back to go. Don't talk to me right now. I'm going to have to take a chance at that.
I want you to hear that again. Catherine passed up a promotion at work so she could stay in the job she is right now because she has lots of freedom, lots of opportunity to reach out to people. She said the best job she's got is being an ambassador for Christ. She doesn't need that promotion. And she's had an influence on, you know, how many people from her work have come and heard about Jesus and been baptized. There are just several people have been rescued. Anyway, they told her, her supervisor said they can't come into her work area and talk to her. And then they told her that they couldn't go into the break room and talk about Jesus. So somebody moved the break table outside. And so that's where they go now. Are there people going to resist? And while that point, and while Donna's point and Catherine's point still focuses on the world, and we never got to the point, because the truth is, y'all, the people you're scared about the most are not those people. The people that cause you the most hesitation in talking about Jesus are your church friends and or other people who are church snobs. I'm going to put it that way. And you have a hard time bringing it up at work because you don't know how they'll react to you. Well, I know they go to church, so I don't want to invite. Guys, we have let ourselves become threatened because somebody goes to church somewhere. And because somebody goes to church somewhere, or because somebody is very active at a church somewhere, we've kind of decided, well, that's not the person to talk to. We need to talk to these real lowly people who don't have any hope, because then they'll be easy. I'm all for that. Let's teach every lowly person we got, starting with me. But if we start letting religious snobs keep us from mentioning Jesus, then we're giving up way a lot of ground that Jesus intended to claim for his kingdom. There are religious people, you're going to see it in chapter 6, many of the priests will become Christians. Those disciples did not give up religious territory. Religious people are going to be disturbed, so what do we do? And this, I'm done. The lesson's real quick. It just jumps off the page at you. Number one, look at verse 8. 8 through 20. I won't read it all. I just want you to note these two verses, these few verses. Verse 9. If we're being called to account today for an act of kindness shown to a cripple and are asked how he was healed, then know this, you and all the people of Israel, it is by the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, whom you crucified, whom God raised from the dead, that this man stands before you healed. Stop. The same thing Peter said in Acts 2 is the same thing Peter said in Acts 3 is the same thing that Peter said in Acts 4. Those of us who grew up going to church became kind of church snobs ourselves. We became sermon snobs. And I can remember being a part of an audience listening to a guy preach and thinking, oh, I've heard that before. And somebody always made sure they told that preacher, I've heard that before. Right? And then when I became when I was a preacher, I would hear it all the time. I'd say, well, we've heard that illustration before, or we've heard that lesson before, or we've heard that verse before. One of our preachers in the little church I grew up moved, and they asked him, why are you moving? Are you upset? He said, no. He said, I've just run out of sermons. Now, that spoke something about his lack of understanding of God's Word, but it also spoke to a lack of how we would have received him preaching some of the same lessons. Because do we need any of the same lessons? And I did tell you back when I was younger and sassy, I preached a lesson and used an illustration that I'd used 1,000 times before because it just fit the point. And a guy that was a part of the singing group, and if I mentioned them, you'd know who they were, he came up to me and he said, man, I've heard that sermon before. I said, you hadn't heard that sermon. He said, yeah, I heard that illustration. I said, well, you've heard the illustration. He said, why do you preachers always do that? Why do y'all use the same illustrations? I just stopped. I said, I'm looking forward to hearing y'all sing. What are y'all going to sing tonight? What are they going to sing every time they get there? The same songs. You sing new songs every time you get. I don't want to sing new songs. I want to sing the songs I'm familiar with, right? The point is this. You're going to have people that are going to challenge you. They're going to people that are going to bug you. They're going to people that are going to whine about you. What do? We talk about Jesus. And we say it again and again and again. And if they get tired of saying it, hearing it, we'd say it again. What are you talking about? I'm talking about Jesus. What are you talking about? I'm talking about Jesus. Well, why are you talking about that? Because look what he did for me. We talk about Jesus. Quit trying to make this hard. Quit trying to be sophisticated. Quit trying to be, oh, and this, I've been saving this one. Quit trying to be effective. Because you're wearing yourself out trying to be effective. Just be boring Jesus. Just Jesus, 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 Jesus. Just keep saying it till somebody says who, and you say it one more time. Because here's why. Look at verse 12. Salvation is found in no other. There is no other name under heaven given to men by which we must be saved. It's not your mama, it's not your daddy, it's not your grandma, not your grandpa, not your priest, not your pastor, not your pope, not your rabbi, if you need to hear that one. It's not even your own heart. It's not even your own spirit. It's not even your own feelings. No. Salvation is found in nobody but Jesus. So no wonder we talk about Jesus. And I believe it, folks. If we could focus our attention on Jesus and just keep talking to people about Jesus and find ways to talk to people about Jesus, then we might start to see people open their hearts up and to receive that, because there are people that want salvation. I was told long time ago now, early on, when we begin to see people obey Jesus, I was told, you can't plant a church like that in Lubbock, Texas. Can you? You don't. I love what we do in Honduras. You know I love what we do on mission work. I love teaching Bible all over the world. I love it. But you know, the same thing can go on across the street as goes on around the world. We just don't do the same thing across the street that we do around the world. Let's talk Jesus, number one. And I got it. We'll tie it off with verse 19 and 20. I wasn't taught this, y'all. I was not taught this. In fact, when it was taught to me in a school where they teach you about preaching, this was explained away. I'm not going to explain it away. I'm going to tell you this is what we need to do. Peter says, judge for yourselves whether it's right in the sight of God to obey God, to obey you rather than men. For we cannot help speaking about what we have seen and heard. Won't you do that? Quit trying to convince people that they're wrong and just tell them what you've seen and heard. Now, I know they were eyewitnesses to things that I'm not an eyewitness of. But have you seen some things here? Have you seen some things here that are worth repeating? Have some things happened in your life because of Jesus that are worth repeating? Quit trying to convince everybody they're wrong and just start talking about Jesus who is right. And I can't answer your question, atheist friend. And I can't argue your point, priest and rabbi. But I can tell you what I've seen and heard. I don't have to answer their questions. I don't have to correct their doctrines. I just talk about Jesus and what I've seen and heard. That's number one. We talk about Jesus. Then number two, look at the last section. I mean, not the last section, middle section, 23. 23 to about 31. What do we do? Go ahead and read the chapter heading, because I mean the paragraph heading. That's what you're doing anyway, slackers. What do? They prayed. Whoa. They did what? Man, what are we going to do? You know, we got these people mad at us, and these people are upset with us, and there was somebody that said they were mad at us, and they're never going to come to church again. What are we going to do? Oh, what are we going to do? We get all chicken little. What do we do? What do we do? This is real easy. This is one of those words that you can't go wrong. What do we do?
Pray.
We pray. Now look what they prayed for. I love this. When they got together to pray, they said, Lord, look at verse 29. Enable your servants to speak your word with great boldness. Now we've studied this, folks. We've talked about it. And we still, are not catching on to it. If we're praying for boldness, we're still waiting for God to take away our fear. I have a hard time inviting people to church. I have a hard time inviting people to have a Bible study. I have a hard time inviting people to come see Rex. You have a hard time? Then start praying for boldness. Well, don't sit there when you're praying for boldness. Don't wait for God to take away the fear, because if you don't have fear, you don't need boldness. What they were saying is, God, help us, enable us, empower us to keep doing it even when we're scared to death. Because you know why you're scared? Somebody tell me why you're scared. Then nobody's going to beat us. Tell me why we're scared. Why are we nervous? They might say no. Oh, my goodness. We're not going to come to that church. Oh, that hurt. Oh, it makes you sad, but it's not going to hurt you any. Let's stop thinking about what they're going to do to us and let's start thinking about what we're going to do for them. Enable us, God, to speak with boldness. What are we afraid of? Well, they're going to reject us. That's a lie. We do not really believe that. I promise you. We use that as an excuse to keep ourselves from doing it, but we don't. I promise you. You talk to your best friend. Let's start there. Go to your very best friend, the friend that you would share anything and everything with in the history of the world, and say, can I talk to you about something important? What's that best friend going to say? They're going to say, for sure. And I guarantee it, would you, if you do this, and I promise you, you think I'm lying to you. Kelly will testify. Catherine will testify. I guarantee you, if you just say, Susie, Tammy, Tommy, Frank, Fred, whatever their name is, would you let me talk to you about something that's really important? They're going to say yes, right? Because they're your best friend. And then you say, I've got a friend named Rex who wants to tell you a story about from the Bible. Would you mind listening to him? That's all you got to do is just listen to him. He's old. He doesn't have long to live. He thinks he just needs to tell one more person the story. What do you think they're going to do? They've come to your Avon meetings. They've come to your, what's all those vitamin, AvoCare meetings. They've come to your garage sale meetings. They've come to all that stuff. What I can do is just sit, let me tell them the story one time. I promise. Will it work?
Yes.
Will it work?
Yes.
Will it work? Yeah, just one time. And I promise I won't make them mad, and they won't be mad at you. If they get mad, they'll get mad at me, but I promise they're not going to get mad. I don't make people mad because I don't tell them they're wrong. I just show them what Jesus says is right. I promise I won't make them mad. Just one time, and I guarantee you, I'm saying this with Melanie here, okay? You find a time, we'll find the time. You set it up, we'll be there. I'll be there. She'll be watching Owen. I'll bring Owen. That's right. Ooh, that'd even be better. And then we can look at none of them. Pray for boldness and then find ways to fulfill that prayer. Find ways for God to fulfill that prayer in you. Talk about Jesus and pray. The last chapter, the last paragraph really belongs to the next chapter, so we're only going to mention it because it's going to be the introduction for next week. Share things with people who need it. Are we going to build a church here or are we done? Are we done? Yeah, I think. For the most part, we're pretty much church folks, and we've gotten into a routine of coming at 9. I wonder how many folks we invited to come with us this morning. Well, they won't get up. Did you ask them? And maybe they won't get up. So what about bringing them back for lunch? We planned for 35. Donna planned for 35 for lunch last week. Fed 60. And had plenty. Didn't run out of peanut butter. I'm telling you, there are people out there that if you'll ask, they'll come. Let's talk Jesus. Let's pray for boldness. And let's help people who need us. That's what they did. And God built a church in them that's alive even today in this place.